I'm Brandon Blevins with CertSecurity.com. Joining me today is Richard Hunter, Vice President and Gartner Fellow with Gartner Incorporated. Richard Hunter, it's great to have you with us.
My pleasure.
If we could begin by just discussing the general cyber threat landscape for a moment. First, let's talk about how enterprises should approach the cyber threat landscape. Are there still a few major threats that affect most enterprises, or does each enterprise face a unique set of threats?
The short answer to the first question is yes, there are broad threats. At this point in time, we've been through an evolution of the hacking scene. We've gone from hacking for sport and hacking for fun to hacking for profit. We are now seeing hacking for political ends as well. Given that technology worldwide, the technologies of computation and communication have been thoroughly democratized to the point where a 24-year-old kid in Tunisia has the tools at his disposal to create a revolution online. Given that we're in that kind of environment, we can expect the number of attackers, the variety of attackers, and the motivation of attackers to continue to evolve towards higher levels of activity and higher levels of complexity. So in a general sense, cybercrime is becoming a more ubiquitous activity, a more common activity. And targeted attacks as well are increasing in frequency. To put it another way, if you are an attractive target for any one of a number of reasons, because you hold proprietary information that's interesting, because you have lots of money, because you have angered someone through your political activities or some other activities, if for any of these reasons you are an attractive target, you can fully expect that somebody will come calling.
The term Advanced Persistent Threat, or APT, is widely known, but also widely misused. What are your thoughts on the term, and is there a better language to describe advanced threats?
I'd say it's a good enough term for right now. Ultimately, we'll be thinking of these as something else. But an advanced persistent threat basically refers to an attacker who is motivated, highly skilled, and quite patient. An attacker who's willing to devote considerable amounts of time and effort in the pursuit of a particular target. Often an attacker who embeds him or herself into your organization, either in person or by proxy through a piece of malicious software, let's say, in order to harvest something of value from you over a long period of time. Perhaps not even knowing at the beginning of the episode what they're ultimately going to be able to take. So an advanced persistent threat is, how do I put it, it's something like a chronic disease. It stays with you, and it can hurt.
Now, does a persistent threat necessarily need to be advanced? Going back to the democratization of technology that you mentioned, someone could necessarily be persistent, but with, say, automated tools. Is that a possibility?
They could be persistent with automated tools. They could be persistent using social skills. They could be persistent and bribe your systems administrator to hand over the keys to the kingdom. There are lots and lots of different attack vectors. The main problem I have with the phrase advanced persistent threat is that what's advanced today is not advanced tomorrow. And we can take it for granted that we're going to have a lot of advances, and these will express themselves in various ways technologically, in terms of the social approaches to attack and so on. Ultimately, we're going to have persistent threats. Whether they're advanced or not is another question.
Now, in terms of automated attacks, DDoS attacks have made a lot of news recently with the spam house attacks. What are enterprises doing to get their arms around larger and more sophisticated DDoS attacks?
The short answer is that there are a number of technical means that could be employed for this purpose. Organizations continue to look for the technological means to repel these attacks, and we increasingly see questions from clients about offensive measures that we might take, we increasingly see questions from clients about potentially offensive activities that they might carry out in order to eliminate the threat of distributed denial of service attacks. The fact that our clients are showing interest in this does not mean that it's legal or even necessarily a good idea, but I think it's a measure of the frustration that people are starting to feel about this stuff.
There's been a lot of talk about supply chain compromises. How seriously are enterprises taking these threats, and what are they doing about them?
Supply chains are increasingly automated. In many cases nowadays, what goes through a supply chain is not necessarily a physical shipment of goods, but a communication about a physical shipment of goods. And in that kind of environment, threats on the technology that support the supply chain are very serious indeed. Do our clients take it seriously? Yes, they do. Will they need to take it more seriously in future? Absolutely. You know, we are entering the era of the Internet of Things, an era in which any device that's bigger and more expensive than a toaster has a brain and a transmitter in it. Some of these devices run supply chains. Some of them will run operations for businesses all over the place that may or may not be about supply chains. But as the world around us is increasingly populated with intelligent devices, devices that make decisions, that communicate about what they're seeing and about the decisions they've made, as that's increasingly the case, we create an environment that's target-rich from an attacker's point of view. And an attacker has many ways in that environment to disrupt a business's or a government's or even an individual's operations. So is it important? Yes. Are companies paying attention to it? Yes. Is the problem going to get bigger before it gets smaller? Yes.
Would you say that attackers are taking on more professional software development characteristics? And if so, what is that going to mean for enterprise defenses?
I would say that attackers are definitely evidencing a higher level of organization than they did previously. We now have markets, established markets, for example, for stolen information, including credit card numbers as well as IP. We have supply chains that support hackers with software and services. We have financial institutions that are essentially bankrolling that stuff. We have, in other words, we have a larger scale criminal infrastructure in place. And there is evidence that this criminal infrastructure is becoming capable of bigger and bigger attacks. So, for example, in April 2008, an attack was mounted against WorldPay that involved simultaneous cyber and physical attacks. Cyber attacks to override withdrawal limits on ATM machines and accounts. Physical attacks to actually go to the ATM machine and withdraw funds. Attackers were able to steal $9 million in the WorldPay attack, which was apparently the first of its kind. But in May of this year, we had a similar attack on a larger scale in which $45 million was stolen from thousands of ATMs on multiple continents over the period of a few days. So this is a level of organization and execution that is more typical of a military organization or a paramilitary organization than an organized criminal organization. You know, criminals do not think this way as a rule. Criminals think, oh, I've stolen a credit card number, I'm going to use that card right now. Criminals do not think, I'm going to stockpile information on thousands of accounts. I'm going to create debit cards that let me access those accounts. I'm going to override the limits using software attacks. You know, sophisticated, multifaceted attacks that take months and hundreds of people to plan and execute. That is something very new. I would suggest that that shows the influence of cyber criminality on organized crime in general. Smarter people, people who think in terms of plans, of schedules, of building infrastructures and architectures. People like that are entering organized criminality. I think it's going to get bigger and badder.
Now, cyber espionage is a topic that's been in the spotlight for all of 2013. First with the Mandiant APT-1 report, and then the various allegations between the U.S. and China regarding cyber espionage activities. Tell me about the conversations you're having with IT security managers. What are their concerns?
Well, the essential concern of an IT security manager is that they could be victimized by these or other hackers, state-sponsored or otherwise. If you combine high levels of motivation, high levels of skill, and high levels of patience in a single person who becomes a hacker, that bodes ill for whatever target they choose. So IT security managers are concerned that this is an insidious threat, that it is a threat that is difficult to detect, and that it is a threat that they are charged to protect against nevertheless.
Some experts have suggested hacking back as a way to retaliate against nation-state cyber espionage. Do you think such a strategy could be effective or even legal?
On the legal side, I'm not a lawyer. But if you asked me to bet on it, I'd bet $50 that the answer is no, it's not legal. But, you know, show me a lawyer who says it is. Do I think it's a good idea? If it were legal, would it be a good idea? The probable answer is no. If someone is skilled enough to get into your network without you knowing about it until it's too late, they're probably skilled enough to hide their tracks or even to create a trail that leads to someone else. And it would be very sad indeed if a hacking incident provoked an attack on an innocent party who just happened to be the most convenient fall guy for a real cyber attacker. So given the burden of proof that's really necessary before you go after someone, I think that there are practical as well as legal obstacles to hacking back being an effective defense tool.
In terms of discussing the origination of attacks, who is attacking, mm-hmm. is there any value for an enterprise knowing who is attacking and from where?
Well, there may or may not be value to the enterprise. The enterprise might be in a position knowing who the attacker was to draw inferences about what the target is, what the attacker's motivation is, and so on, and that might help the enterprise to construct more effective defenses. From the point of view of a government, which is interested in protecting the sovereignty of its nation and protecting its citizens, knowing who the attacker is could be very important, since governments have tools at their disposal for dealing with persistent campaigns by other governments that a citizen doesn't have. So if you can identify an attacker as being a particular party, that may be useful more to a government than to a private sector organization, let's say. In future, I think it'll be even more important. In future, it's not unrealistic to think that certain cyber attacks might invite reprisal with kinetic weapons. And if that were the case, you'd definitely want somebody who had some idea of due process and a pretty good idea of who the attacker was wielding the kinetic weapons. As cyber attacks grow stronger, as the consequences grow bigger, it's not unimaginable that cyber attacks might ultimately result in loss of life as well as loss of property. And in that case, I think it's entirely possible that we'll see governments mounting an active defense, governments taking a cyber attack as an act of war. And by the way, this ultimately will not do cyber criminals any good. If you think that your little cyber attack might result in the Hellfire missile showing up on your doorstep, you might want to think about going into a different business.
Is information sharing between enterprises becoming a more pressing matter as businesses continually find themselves in clashes with nation states that have more funds and more manpower?
They do. I'm sure they will continue to feel that. In some of the scenarios that we've created for security in 2020, which we'll be discussing at this conference, of course, self-help associations, private sector associations, non-governmentally sponsored associations for self-protection become an important mechanism for enterprises who are seeking to secure themselves in an insecure world. In fact, I would say that that if such associations prove to be unworkable, if private associations prove to be ineffective at securing the safety of their members, then I think government regulation becomes that much more likely.
If we could, I'd just like to discuss how IT security risks relate to the business for a moment. Are more enterprises seeing security as a legitimate part of the business, and are CISOs gaining a better footing with C-level executives?
Well, the short answer to both those questions is yes. And the reason has to do with the advance of technology within society generally. You know, 30 years ago, an enterprise was like an island of automation, let's say an oasis of automation in a desert. The world hadn't seen information technology yet. Now we're in an environment in which information technology is everywhere. Everyone has a network connected device on them. Everyone has a computational device that they use at their home or at work. These things are everywhere. Children have them. And this has been reflected in the change in the way you see information technology covered in the popular media. So if you're an executive, for example, you probably read the Wall Street Journal. You may read the New York Times. You probably read one or two other newspapers that are directly related to the region you operate in or something else that's of importance to you. I see in the Wall Street Journal that some organizations are subject to advanced persistent attacks. How do we know that we're not one of those? And so on.
In what ways can an enterprise measure how IT security risks could impact the business?
Well, the first thing we should say is that no risk matters at all in IT or otherwise unless it can have a material impact on the organization's business outcomes. With IT risks, as with anything else, we need to start with what the business outcomes are that we desire and then ask whether there's something in our IT operations that could threaten those outcomes. For most organizations, the best place to start is with a business continuity management exercise. In a business continuity management exercise, the first thing you'll do is identify which business functions are critical and what outcomes might result for the enterprise if those business functions are damaged in some way, compromised, impaired, shut down entirely. Once we know what business functions matter, why they matter, and how they matter, then we're in a strong position to look at them in terms of their information technology and say, we already know that this business function is important. What's the technology that supports that function? What are the vulnerabilities in that technology? What can I do to eliminate those vulnerabilities and therefore to avoid losing the business outcome that we desire?
Should the risk management process be handled centrally or locally within an enterprise?
Different aspects of the risk management function are typically handled at different levels of the enterprise. So, for example, when it comes to identifying a risk, when it comes to recognizing a situation that can have dangerous consequences, The person close to that situation is usually the one who's best positioned to identify the need right there. If I'm working with X every day and I suddenly see a dangerous condition in X, there's no one in the enterprise more appropriate than me to raise the flag and to get something going where controlling that risk is concerned. Enterprises also have strategies, which typically are defined at the top of the exercise and executed throughout the enterprise. Strategic threats that might impact the strategic imperatives for the enterprise, the initiatives that must be carried out for the enterprise to succeed, those sorts of threats can generally be identified at the top of the enterprise, and plans to deal with those threats can then be carried out throughout the enterprise. But enterprise risk management programs, IT risk management programs, that don't take into account every level of the enterprise tend to be failures. You can't dictate policy on high and not do something about the execution and expect anything to work. You can't have a lot of people running around throughout the enterprise addressing risks in the order they appear without having a clear understanding of the importance of the business outcomes that those risks threaten. You know, no enterprise ever will have enough resources to deal with every risk that comes its way. So it's important to understand which risks really have significant consequences before you start throwing resources at the risk.
Security is often seen as a sinkhole for enterprises, but are there also business benefits to properly managing IT risk?
It's dismaying to hear that security is considered a sinkhole in many enterprises. You know, it's tough to be in a profession where the greatest sign of success is that nothing happens. And as the risk manager for a global pharmaceuticals company said to me once, you can never prove that something didn't happen because of your risk management program. You know, ultimately, the value of information security is that it makes it possible for the enterprise to go about its business unimpeded by threats. No one will ever be able to prove that a threat didn't overtake the enterprise because of information security or any other kind of risk management effort. But we can say we have risks. We know something about how to reduce those risks to a level we can live with, and we can determine whether the means that we're using to address that risk are both proportional and appropriate. And that, I think, is what information security and organizations need to do. They need to show that they're addressing the risks that matter to the enterprise in terms of potential adverse business outcomes. They need to show that they're addressing them appropriately in a way that will reduce the risk to tolerable levels. And they need to show that they're doing it effectively, meaning that they are efficient, that they are wise stewards of the enterprise's resources. Mm. For information security professionals, the biggest step is making sure that they're addressing the right risks. And that means being able to position the risks to their colleagues throughout the enterprise in terms of the adverse outcomes for the enterprise, not the failure of the technology.
Richard Hunter, Vice President and Gartner Fellow with Gartner Incorporated. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And to listen to more of our podcasts, be sure to visit searchsecurity.com/podcast. I'm Brandon Blevins. Have a great day.